Mark Zuckerberg will be joining a list of legendary Silicon Valley tech entrepreneurs when he takes Facebook public later this year. Apple's Steve Jobs and Google's Larry Page and Sergey Brin, among others. There was a time when the idea of engineers or scientists starting and running companies was pretty much unheard of. This morning, NPR's Laura Seidel begins a series on the history of Silicon Valley with a look at how the engineer entrepreneur was born.
In 1956, what is now called Silicon Valley was called the Valley of the Heart's Delight. Its rolling hills were covered with farms and orchards. To become Silicon Valley, it needed four ingredients. First, brilliant scientists.
William Shockley, people tend to collectively agree, was one of the smartest people to walk around this valley for quite a long time.
That is Leslie Berlin, a Stanford University archivist and historian. In 1956, Shockley won the Nobel Prize for co-inventing the transistor. His next dream was to make transistors out of silicon. He came here to open his lab.
Because he'd grown up in Palo Alto, his mother was still living in Palo Alto, he liked the area.
It helped that nearby Stanford University was also doing federally funded electronics research. But because Shockley was here, more brilliant scientists followed.
He really understood the physics of these things, more than anybody else in the world at the time, I believe.
That is Gordon Moore, one of the brilliant minds that make up ingredient number one. He would later co-found Intel and come up with Moore's Law, the observation that the number of transistors on a silicon chip doubles about every 2 years. Unfortunately for Moore and the other young scientists who gathered around him, Shockley turned out to be a terrible manager.
He had no idea really what motivated people.
Even worse, he was paranoid and erratic. Moore says he put his employees through lie detector tests. Within a year of opening the lab, Shockley decided he didn't even want to focus on silicon transistors. But the group of scientists, the first ingredient, was here. They still wanted to make silicon transistors, so a group of them decided to leave Shockley. Moore says one of the men sent a letter to his father's investment brokerage firm in New York City asking for advice.
Saying there are a group of us here who are thinking of leaving the company. You think there's a company who'd like to hire the group, is the gist of the letter.
They wanted to be together, and like most scientists in those days, they expected to do it working for a big company. But somehow the letter made its way to the desk of a young Harvard MBA in the firm, Arthur Rock. He flew out west to meet the scientists.
Because these people were working for Shockley, and he had his choice of anyone he wanted to work for him. So I kind of figured they must have been pretty bright.
Rock introduced the second ingredient. Those brilliant minds should start their own business.
It was you who said you guys should go start your own company.
Yes.
That was not something you did in those days, right?
That's correct. Very unusual.
They still needed a third ingredient, and in those days it wasn't easy to find. Money. In his office today, Rock lifts up a piece of lined yellow paper with faded ink.
Now, what is this? This is just
this
a piece
of... This is a list of all the companies we went around to talk to about investing $1.5 million, and none of them were interested.
41 companies, among them Motorola, General Mills, Chrysler, Westinghouse. The investor would get the option to buy, but the founding aid scientists would each get a share of the company.
None of them would do it because they were afraid that people in their company would then wonder about why can't we get some action. They didn't know what to make of it.
Rock was almost ready to give up, but he finally found an investor willing to take a chance on a group of scientists who wanted to start a company. Sherman Fairchild, the owner of Fairchild Camera and Instrument in New York, and an inventor himself, liked risk.
If he had not decided to do this, I think the eight of them would have gone their own ways, gone to work for somebody else, and there would have been no silicon in Silicon Valley.
The group was dubbed the Traitorous Eight. They founded Fairchild Semiconductor in 1957, not far from their old boss's lab in Palo Alto. Fairchild developed the first commercially successful integrated circuit, or microchip, by placing several transistors on a small piece of silicon. It became the industry standard. NASA used Fairchild chips and computers for its Apollo space program. But a fourth ingredient was needed to make Silicon Valley into the tech hub of the world, a total break from the East Coast mentality. When Fairchild's investors back east took the option to buy the company, its executives didn't understand things like giving stock options to employees.
Their attitude was much like everyone else on the East Coast. Companies could give out a few options, but only to the top executives. Very staid and white shoe.
One executive called the idea of stock options creeping socialism.
They did things the way their fathers did them.
The West Coast Fairchild executives got frustrated. They were ready to make the break from the East Coast. So when Gordon Moore and another member of the Traitorous Eight, Robert Noyce, set out to start their own company, they had everything. The cluster of brilliant scientists who wanted to be entrepreneurs and money that didn't tie them to the East Coast. Their old friend, Arthur Rock, was now a venture capitalist in Northern California, and they turned to him for investment.
It was easy. Everybody knew him. I got together a memorandum of probably a page and a half and made some telephone calls, and so it took me a whole day and a half to put together the financing.
My wife was getting phone calls at home with people wanting to put money into the operation and so forth. We didn't need any more. We had enough to get started.
With $3 million, Moore and Noyce founded Intel in 1968. And by now, many scientists had left Fairchild to start their own companies. Leslie Berlin says there was a new mindset among scientists.
In 1969, there was a conference for semiconductor companies, and more than 1,000 people attended a seminar called something like Startup Companies, The Engineer Becomes Entrepreneur. They were sitting in the aisles. They were having it broadcast on closed caption TV. This was the time and the place to start a company.
2 years later, in 1971, a series of articles in a trade newspaper was titled Silicon Valley USA. It was the first time the name had been used in print, and it stuck. Intel would become the world's leading chip maker. Its chips became the guts inside most of our PCs. Gordon Moore believes the computer revolution might have taken longer if research and development had been trapped inside an old company bureaucracy.
If we had stayed at Shockley, we never would have made the radical kinds of changes that we were able to make by leaving and starting over.
But Moore says crucial to the birth of Silicon Valley was a new kind of funding. Tomorrow, we'll look at how the birth of modern venture capital began alongside the digital revolution. Laura Seidel, NPR News, San Francisco.
And you can scroll through a Silicon Valley timeline complete with photos at npr.org.